So the things that I've done, I have not been fearless. Like I've had doubt. What if that? But I would do this. But it was like, yo, again, don't die with your music inside of you. Like you don't want to live with regrets. And then also like thinking about like the fact that time is not promised. Because we would, you know, I would say, man, all right, I'll get to that later at some other point. But
Welcome to the No More Reasonable Doubt podcast. In season two of this podcast, it's made to help Black professionals start passion projects so they can expand their impact in the world and at work. In each episode, you can expect an interview with a Black professional who has a 9-to-5 just like you. And they've also launched a passion project into this world. You'll also get episodes with specific topics and lessons to help you move that passion project forward. I'm your host and fellow passion project starter, Mike Ambassador Bruni. Let's start the show.
Our special guest is Dr. Don Sawyer.
Thank pleasure, you for having man. Me.
Anytime
brother.
I get to chat with you is a pleasure. And especially now you get to share some of the things that you're working on. The first question I like to ask my guest is, what do you do for full-time work?
What do I do for full-time work? Right now, I serve as VP for Equity and Inclusion at Quinnipiac University. I'm also a tenured associate professor of sociology in the Department of Sociology, Criminal Justice, and Anthropology. So that's what takes up my time, my 9-to-5, although I don't believe I end at 5 on most days.
Yes.
That's what's taking up my work time.
Well, what is your passion project, and how long has it been in existence?
Man, and so the interesting thing, I came on thinking I was going to talk
Ooh,
about one.
Lucky
but I
us.
Have two. So one, I'll talk about one briefly that kind of got put on pause due to COVID. I mean, as you know, I do work with hip hop and education. I always talk about how hip hop saved my life. And I always kind of talk back to the crowd or the angry voices that talk about how hip hop harms. And so I believe that hip hop can heal. So I started a project called Hip Hop Heals. And it's a project that I started in the Dominican Republic. I was there in the Dominican Republic, you know, for work. And, you know, I met a Haitian brother, Clarence. And, you know, we started talking about hip hop. And he talked about the love of hip hop in the Dominican Republic. And so we were there working with Haitians who live in the Dominican Republic. And they said that they loved hip hop, and but they didn't have the ability to record. And so I went and I raised money to build a studio there, the Hip Hop Heal Studio. And the tagline is building bridges 16 bars at a time. We've been kind of connecting Haitian and Dominican youth together. As you know, brother, the history between Haiti and the Dominican Republic has not always been friendly. And some, you know, tension still exist. But these youth wanted to come together through a love of hip hop. And so the first group that came out of it was the Street Boys. And it's a rap group with two Haitians and two Dominicans in the same group. And so, again, like we believe that hip hop can heal, and we're building those bridges 16 bars at a time. And so, you know, we did some videos. We had, like I said, a recording studio there. We also had equipment to record the histories of the elders who lived in the community. You have some elders, some of our Haitian elders who came over to the country and have been there, you know, for many years, and the youth didn't know the history of their family in the country. And so we bought equipment with the hopes that they would be able to record some of that digital, that history, and preserve it in a digital manner. You know, I've been traveling back and forth, but, you know, due to COVID, it's kind of been shut down at this point in time. So I've still been connecting with the youth through social media, mainly through, you know, Facebook. I'm still connected
That's
with
dope.
The folks there.
That's really dope. I didn't realize that there was a part around recording the history.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the pieces, because like when I was there, you know, there are people who are like 90 years old who are living in the Batés, you know, just really beautiful people who remember their home. So they remember Haiti, right? But the youth who were there were born in the DR and really don't have any, they've never, some of them have never been there,
oh.
right? They've never been to Haiti. And so, as we think about, you know, the preservation of history and stories, that was the space where the project was going, because we already had the rap part and the recording studio part done, and then we were making the shift to start doing the stories. And so it started off with like portraits. And so I was taking picture, like portraits of some of the elders in the community, because they had never had a portrait taken of them. And so I, you know, I did these nice professional portraits, and when I went back, I gave it to them. And like, I get emotional thinking about it. Like this one brother, when I gave him the picture that I took of his wife, this nice portrait, like he put his hand over his heart and like took 3 steps back and was just like, "Hey," like just kind of looking at, you know, the picture. Because I think a lot of times when some of us from the U.S. go, you know, to these places and communities, is some of the photography that happens is very exploitive, right? We want to take pictures that show this, the condition that folks are living in. But I think that's problematic, right? And so the title of the project was A Beautiful People, right? Because I think when we understand that people still find joy in these places, it's important to highlight that joy and that happiness, and to let them let you know how they want to be photographed. And so it was just, you know, portraits of beautiful people. And that's kind of, and that was going to be leading into the digital awesome. Storytelling piece.
Is there anything, I know you said you had two that you wanted to share. Is there anything else you want to say about this one?
No, I mean, I'm really hoping, you know, once these vaccines roll out, or, you know, once we get to a point where we can open up travel again, you know, just to be able to head out there and just get back and doing, you know, the work. I mean, I think that you know, that's my hope. But, you know, it's still going. The young man is still producing music. So, yeah, man, I mean, awesome. I think that's all I would have to say about that one.
And what is the second project that you've started?
The second project is actually a scholarship fund. It's called the Projects to PhD Scholarship Fund. You know, I started that actually in December of 2020. You know, I had the domain name and the logo done probably since 2017, but I just put it on the back burner and left it there. But in December, I was like, okay, I'm going to start out and start, you know, raising some money for the projects to be PhD scholarship fund. And the reason why it's called Projects to PhD is because I came from the projects. I started in the projects, and, you know, I was blessed and fortunate enough to make it to obtain a PhD. And so I wanted to help other people who had aspirations of higher education. And so the scholarship fund was to help, you know, people who are living in subsidized or public housing, you know, with book scholarships and things of that nature, just to help them along the journey. And so I started it out in December. I mean, my goal was really to raise like $1,500, because I'm always afraid or nervous around asking people for money. And, you know, I'm like, you know, are people going to want to do this? Are people going to believe in this? We're in the midst of a pandemic. Do people want to support something like this? And so I was like, okay, well, I'll sell some shirts and raise like $1,500. And then one of my friends was like, I think you can raise more. And then if you get it with like a community foundation, you know, they can help you grow the money. But it was like, in order to do that, you have to raise $10,000. And I'm like, I'm trying to raise maybe 2,000. How am I gonna get to 10,000? But lo and behold, you know, in between the December start and now, we're up to about 10,300. Like, I've transferred the fund over to the Community Foundation of Greater New Haven fund. We've connected with the Elm City Housing Authority to work with them to start the process of the scholarship. And so now that I'm with the foundation, you know, I have a 501c3 status now through them. And so I can get different types of donations and matching donations. And so I'll probably be doing another kickoff of fundraising for it. But I was able to raise, you know, about $10,300 to start the scholarship fund.
That's amazing. And you answered tons of questions that I usually have. One is the origin story. One was the origin story. Actually, let's see. Was there a particular point, though, that really had you say, yo, I want to do this? I understand where you came from, but was there something specific happening that had you go, you know what? I want to help. I want to raise some money.
I mean, I think part of it was like just thinking about, you know, the people who have dropped gems on me, you know, over the years, like the people who guided me. I mean, a lot of the people who guided me are people who continue to live in the projects. You know, they never gave up on me. And then I also thought about, you know, my time at Hartwick. I mean, there were some times when I needed money. You know, I had my daughter when I was in college, you know, and I would have to go to the school to get like an emergency loan for like $500 or $1,000 or something like that, just to make sure everything was going to be everything. And so just kind of thinking about that, I was like, you know, what can I do to kind of pay it forward? And like, I mean, similar to the thing that made me pick it back up again is stuff that you, like you would say, like, and I think I told you this, that you always say, you know, don't die with your music inside of you. Like, and that always sticks with me. Like, and I mean, you said that a while ago, but like, it's never left me. Like, don't die with your music still inside of you. And so every now and again, I look back and I go, I have so many things that I've put on the back burner. Why do I keep them on the back burner? And some of it is because of fear, right? Of what will happen or what won't go well. And so I was like, you know what? I know that I struggle with asking people for things, but I'm going to put myself out there and just do it. And so it was like, it kicked it off on like December 5th or something like that. Started raising money and people started buying shirts and people were like, yo, absolutely, we support it, yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, a few days later, my father passed away on December 13th. And so I was like, okay, well, what will my dad want? You know, my dad didn't finish high school. He later on got his GED. And he wanted to go to college, but, you know, he couldn't really go because of sickle cell. And so, but he made sure that education was important for me and my brother, and he always had a giving spirit. So I was like, in his honor, you know, instead of donating or giving flowers, you know, you can donate to the Projects of PhD Scholarship Fund. And, you know, people, you know, started to donate, you know, to that, even those who didn't even want the t-shirts, they just started donating to the fund. You know, people donated $50, $100, $10. It didn't matter. Like, the largest gift from a person was about $1,000. But people just believed in the vision. People valued like the relationship that I had with them and believed in my vision. And so that, I mean, that was a humbling experience for me, but that's kind of why, you know, I started it.
There's something that's kind of floating for me now with how well this has done. And you have me thinking about what's possible for you now, you know, because there's things that are on the back burner, but it's like, man, with this acknowledgement that people, you know, people want to give to good causes and want to give to good people. When you really think about it, you know, it really is about the person in many cases. It's really about the relationship that you've built. Like, boy, we can't wait to see what else comes, you know, comes out from your stove, as they're on the back burner, you know, see what comes off the stove, man. We ready to eat. So well, I'm glad that you're out there doing that. Well, one of the biggest challenges that people face when it comes to starting a passion or a purpose project is finding time in their already busy lives to do it. The folks I'm talking to have work, they may have family, they may have other obligations. How did you find or make time to bring your projects to light?
Oh, man. I mean, part of it is, I mean, one of the things that I learned, I mean, because I used to say, I got to find the time, right? And it's like, you don't find time. You have to make the time, right? And so it's kind of like thinking about like your schedule. So I have a professional coach that my supervisor got me, right? My supervisor has really invested in me and my vision for my future. And so she offered up the opportunity to pay for, you know, a coach, or to provide a coach that she knew. And so we worked together on some things. And I talked with this coach about procrastination, putting things on the back burner, and that's been like kind of eye opening for me, like in finding time, because I had to think about like what was taking up most of my time, right? And it would be like little things that were taking up my time, and so it was so many little things that were taking up my time that I didn't make time to do any strategic visioning, right? I didn't have any strategic visioning time, and so I was just caught up in the weeds of everything. And some of those things I could have easily delegated to other folks so I can get that time to really think strategically. And so I've just had to like really start doing this mastering of my schedule. And one of the things that she's told me recently, and she was like, don't prioritize your calendar, schedule your priorities. And so I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because like people want my time. And so I can go through a whole day of meetings and forget that, oh, snap, I didn't even set time out for lunch, or I didn't even set time to check my emails and respond. And now that the day is at 5 o'clock, I got to do my emails and stuff after the workday. And so it's just really being intentional about putting time in my calendar, just like I would schedule and make an appointment with someone else. Like I have to schedule an appointment with myself. And that's the way that I found the time and like, and prioritizing, because, you know, I have my kids here. And so I gotta, you know, I'm making dinner. You know, we watch our TV show at night just to kind of connect and talk a bit. And then, you know, we can go and do, you know, some other things. But it's really looking at my schedule and thinking about like how I use my time and if I'm using it in the most efficient way. And I'm still getting better at it. You know, this is not perfected.
You've set someone free. what you've shared just set someone free. Someone's sitting there going, yeah, man, I got all these meetings or I got stuff. It's not their stuff. You know, whether it be priority or whether it be a value. Like they're not necessarily scheduling the things that are important to them first. And then making space for the other things. So that's thank you for sharing that. The other thing that folks into is, all right, so we spoke about time. You just broke down different things we can do to help us with making time in order to actually start to take steps towards our passion projects, our purpose projects. The other thing is, man, you done finished with work, and I'll call it 9 to 5. I use that loosely, but you finish your 9 to 5, you done given 95% of your energy. And then you come home. How did you find energy, or what are some ways that you rejuvenate yourself so you can get after these projects?
Yeah, to be honest, I never valued sleep so much in my life as I do right now, because I think taking naps are beautiful things when you can. So what I've tried to do is at least 3 times a week, I go and do a workout, right, in the morning. And then, you know, I get myself together to go through the day. And like for some strange reason, I feel energized after the workout. And that gets me through the day. But sometimes around 5 or 6, excuse me, it starts to catch up with me. My legs feel, it remind me of what I was doing earlier that morning. And so, you know, I'll do certain, and sometimes I'll take a nap, like a power nap on the couch or something like that. And then, you know, get back at it, because I think balance is key, right? So if I take my nap, and let's say I take a nap and I'm done at like 6, I don't know. I don't take a nap every day, but then I'm doing dinner and we eat, we watch a TV show or whatever. And so that's usually ending around 8 o'clock, right? And then from there, you know, people are cleaning up and doing whatever. And so that time I can put a little bit of time aside to work on some things right there, like, 8 to 9 or 8 to 9:30 if I wanted to do that. Because I mean, I don't watch a lot of TV, so I can do a little bit of that. And I try and get to bed at a decent hour, like usually around, I mean, it's still late, but like around 11:30, between 11:30 and midnight. And then I get up in the morning at around 7. So I try and get at least 7 hours of sleep. If I go to bed at 11, then I'm getting 8 hours of sleep. And so that's kind of how I try and break, down my schedule, making sure I'm getting some family time. I'm getting some personal time. Then sometimes I just want to just do nothing, but then I can also use some strategic time to think
That's
about projects.
especially right now as we're recording, we're in the pandemic, and who knows when people will be listening to this. But and I almost went right by it. That making time to think, that strategic thinking time is so important. That could easily be could be overlooked as well. It's just having time to let things marinate a little bit. So the other thing, so we got energy, we got the time, we got the energy. A question that I like to ask is around, have you seen a way that your passion project has impacted the way you show up at your day job or your passion projects? Has those things provided something to what you do from a day to day?
I mean, I think part of it, I haven't even like really thought about the connection between the two per se. And the way that I approach my work, I like to think about like what are the things that I can do that are going to have the biggest impact, right? And so I think about that with my projects, and now I have to think about that with my 9 to 5, right? We know that time is limited, but what are the ways that I can use my time to have this to have the biggest impact on the organization where I work? And so I've connected that to the way, that I work, and with my passion projects. And so that, I mean, that's the connection that I make. And sometimes like I try and tie my passion projects into my job. And I've been able to do that on a number of occasions, two that I can think of at the moment, where it was something that I was passionate about, and I ended up doing it through work, right? Because I felt that it would benefit the institution, it would benefit the students, and it would also benefit me in my heart, because it was something that I wanted to do, that I thought was important enough to kind of blend those
Awesome.
worlds.
Is there anything you feel comfortable sharing with us? Any of those examples?
Oh, yeah. So one of them was, so I do work, with an organization in Connecticut that works with men and women who are reentering society after serving time in prison. So I've been working with them for a number of years. And, one of the things that I found was that the general public really doesn't understand, and it's through no fault of their own, is they don't necessarily understand the process and the obstacles that someone faces when they're returning home after serving time in prison, right? And they don't necessarily understand who these people are, right? And you think these people are seen as, they're seen based on what they did, not who they are, right? And so one of the things that I found, and even in research that's done, in the criminal justice arena, I mean, a lot of it is quantitative, right? So this amount of people come out, this amount of people recidivate and go back, but the numbers don't tell you the stories of the people, right? People would assume that the people who go back to prison go back because they committed another crime, right? And that's not necessarily the case. Where people can be violated for so many different things and have to go back to prison. And so what I wanted to do was, I was like, okay, how can I take their stories and develop an activist theater project, right? Because I like theater and I love the work that I was doing with the men who I was working with in the community, and I knew the theater director here. And so I went to him. I was like, you know, hey, Kev, this is something that I'm thinking of. You know, I'm working with these men who have re-entered, and I know you do theater, but I'm thinking of the story of monologues that we would use as an activist form of theater. Kevin agreed. So we got the theater department involved, you know, faculty, staff, and students to work with these brothers to help tell their stories. And so we had, I think we did like four sold out shows in the theater, because my bet was that if people came in and heard their stories, it would be impossible for them not to be moved to action, right? The other thing that I took a bet on was that when people heard their stories, you know, when we talk about giving people second chances, they would realize that many of these men who sharing their stories never really had a first chance, right? You know, based on the way that they lived. And so I made sure that the president of the institution was there and her husband. You know, I made sure that there were like professors there, law professors, there were some lawyers, there was at least one judge who was there, and students who were in criminal justice and students who are not, to hear these stories. You know, people were crying and asking, you know, what can they do? Because they didn't know. They did not know. And so, you know, afterwards, you know, people are talking and engaging with these men. You know, the president invited them to, you know, the basketball game, to the presidential suite and dinner and all of that stuff. Made donations and, you know, helped to raise funds for the organization. But that was an example of how I took it, something I was passionate about that I was doing out in the community, but brought it and connected it to my world of work. And it, like I said, like it benefited the men who I was working with, and it also benefited like my students, right? Part of it was that hopefully they would have a transformative experience that would change their worldview. Because if the general public doesn't know about what's happening to these young men and women who are coming home, then the laws will never change, right? Because we need people, the general public, to push our legislators to make legislation that's conducive for these men and women to be successful. And so I was trying to impact my sphere of influence of the general public.
And I think the sphere of influence, you finishing off with that, is really powerful, because that's one of the things I was really feeling there, is leverage. Of like, what do I have, and how can I leverage it in order to have bigger, greater impact? So, and there's a couple of things that come here. One, it feels like, because I've known you a while, and I feel like I didn't know about this. So I'm like, what else is he working on? That's one thing. The other thing is like, oh, it feels like he's just getting started. Like there's this feeling of like there are all these leverage points that you can do, and I use the word leverage on purpose, because it isn't burnout. It is you know, literally leverage. You're pushing on one thing, but it causes a whole bunch of stuff to happen that really couldn't happen like on one person, on your own. So I can't help but feel like I have to keep saying thank you as we go through this interview. So I'll say it again. Thank you. Thank you, man. With all that, there's someone who's listening to this interview and to this episode, and they're like, man, look at what this guy has done. Look at the way he's got his time. You know, he's looked at time differently. Look at the way he gets his energy. Look at the way he's leveraged different things that he has, and how he's tied his work and his passions together. But they're still on the fence of starting something that's on their heart. What might you say to someone who's listening but may need some kind of push or some kind of additional, they need a word. what would you say?
I think like with that, Mike, like I think some people paint the picture like the people who are out there doing this stuff are fearless, right? And I can't speak for everyone else, but that's not my case. Like I I get nervous when it's stuff like this, right? I get nervous, but I say I'm gonna do it anyway. Like on, like even on like ropes courses and stuff like that. Like I'm afraid of heights, right? But I do it to challenge myself, and so I build up evidence, right? And so when I'm facing another obstacle, I can look back and be like, okay, I overcame all of that stuff, so I can do this and overcome it, right? And so I try and challenge myself to move forward, even in the midst of fear and uncertainty, right? Because I wouldn't be honest if I'm like, oh yeah, I'm fearless. I don't care. I just go for it. That is not the case. Like I'm nervous. I don't know if it's gonna work out, but I'm like, you know, I'm gonna try, and I challenge myself. Like I, for my 40th birthday, like again, I'm afraid of heights. I went skydiving. Again, I don't think I would do it again because I've survived it, so don't need to push luck. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like I challenge myself like to do it. And so doing that opened me up to do a lot of the other things. And so the things that I've done, I have not been fearless. Like I've had doubt. What if that? But I would do this. But it was like, yo, again, don't die with some music inside of you. Like you don't want to live with regrets. And then also like thinking about like the fact that time is not promised. Because we would, you know, I would say, man, all right, I'll get to that later at some other point. But we can't guarantee that this is going to be another point of time. And so we try it. And then the other thing I'll say that motivated me is that they, and this is not to sound like I'm the have the most skill in everything, but I've seen people who go out there who don't have the skills that I have, but they're confident as hell and they're out there doing it. And I know that my product can be better, but here I am sitting in self-doubt. Right? And you know, it's not necessarily to compare myself with others, but I'll see stuff like, oh my God, I can do it. Like that's what I want to do that. They're out there. Oh my gosh, like what's holding me back? And it's fear
You
and
know,
self-doubt, like a fear of
I think in
failure.
lyrics, so you have me thinking about far from a Harvard student just had the balls to do it. Wow. So it just feels like that needs some space for the people listening, man, with what how however hard your heart is pumping, it's like deciding to do it and take a step. Decide to take a step. So with that and the different projects you've done, and this may be a general question, I like to ask about resources that have kind of shaped your path when it comes to the different projects and doing things. And who knows, maybe it's at a point where there's like some doubt, there's a book that you pick up. But are there one to three books, and I use books very loosely because you can be like, well, there's this website that have kind of that you would share with others that have had impact on you when it comes to actually getting things done and moving forward?
I mean, a couple of, I'm trying to think of other books. I mean, I usually like, I Google stuff, like see what, you know, what people are talking about and looking at what other people have done. And of course, I'm blanking on the author's name, but it
Austin
was a book I
Kleon,
read a
yeah.
while ago, like
Austin
Steal Like
Kleon.
an Artist. Yeah. So in reading that book, I'm like, what is this about? I'm like, oh, okay. Got some ideas there. Because I mean, I don't think anything that I've done is necessarily original, right? I mean, I'm sure similar things have been done in other places. But just sometimes I look at what other people have done and like, okay, that's similar to something I want to do. And so I can look at their model and develop my model and base it on off of something that I've seen. I've started to look at this book called Start With Why, and really asking myself and everyone else, like what is your why? You know, like what is your why? And there was another book that I got my staff that I also read. I don't understand why the name was not coming to me, but I bought this book for my whole staff.
Yes,
And I think, oh, I think it's
Keller.
called The One Thing. So that was a book that I read
Those are all
that had an
very
impact
powerful, powerful
on
books.
my thinking.
At least from like the Austin Kleon in front of me right now, I have this first of all, I have one of his books. I like his work, but I have this poster board up that says Words Matter. And then I have like different things that I've put on it over time. Mm-hmm. And there's two from Austin Kleon. One says, you don't want to steal the style. You want to steal the thinking behind the style. And then the second one is, you don't want to look like your heroes. You want to see mm-hmm. like your heroes. So thank you for sharing that. The way that you talk mm-hmm. about kind of research in you know, the first book you shared with us was The Google, and kind of leveraging that. And in my mind, I felt like, oh, the way you're looking at it, that's very PhD of you. Like, that's what it felt like. It's like it felt very much like, and I think this is important for people to note, right? Like, it felt like it was that's what you would do when you're researching, right? Like, that's what it sounded like to me. It's like, you would look, what else is out there? Kind of do a little bit of a review. All right. So I have an idea based on what's out there. How do I want to, mm-hmm. you know, how do I want to either remix it, or how do I want to leverage it, or how do I even want to reference it, you know, as I'm doing my own project. So that's how it felt to me. And I don't know if you would attribute some or all of that process to the PhD experience.
I mean, I don't know. Like, if you talk to some of my friends or people, or even some of my colleagues, like, I can't turn it off. Like I research everything, but sometimes if you're not careful, research can be a tool of procrastination, right? Because I'll be researching my butt off and go down all of these rabbit holes and still don't produce anything, right? So I think research, you got to cut it off at some point in time, right? Because I think it can be used as a tool of procrastination. But for me, it's important because it doesn't make sense for me to kind of jump out there without knowing what the landscape is, right? You know, it's almost like going outside.
Oh, you just stick your hand out.
You know, without checking the weather, you know? sticking your hand out. You know what I'm saying? yeah, you put your hand out the door. So that's what Google is. I'm putting my hand out the door, seeing what's out there, seeing what I need to do, right? And again, like you said, it's not mimicking someone's product, but like seeing what they did. And sometimes, like, if you go like and you go to like a company or something like that, and it says like about, and it tells you like their thought process behind it. So it's like, oh, okay. So you're not trying to do the same thing that they did, but like you said, you want to see how they see. How did you see the world? Right? What drove you to do this? Right? And then the other thing that I think the research is important, at least for me, mm-hmm. is learning from people's mistakes. Like, people drop so many gems to tell you how they messed up. And if we pay attention to mm-hmm. what mistakes people made, then we don't have to make those same mistakes. Not saying that we won't make any, but we don't have to make the same mistakes because people tell you. I mean, and even if we go back to like to the PhD research, right? For those who are looking for research topics and stuff like mm-hmm. that, at the end of an article, at the end of a dissertation or something like that, the author says, I studied this. However, what I think would be important to the field to know are these three things. Mm-hmm. And so they mm-hmm. give you three topics that you can go and research yourself.
Not always, but doesn't it also lean to also, hey, here's what I would have done differently, or here's something for future study. Like they leave room for, listen, this was the scope of what I was doing, but there's some more stuff that's pretty cool. That's really cool.
And you can find, and you can find things, right? And so, like, even, I don't know how I got to this, but like, even like, I saw this quote and I use it with the students that I advise, or right? I never ask them, what do you want to be like when you grow up or whatever, right? It's like, I saw this quote that says, ask students what problems they want to solve and allow that to guide their choices. Like, what problems are you interested in solving? And then that's what you do. And so that's kind of how I move. And try and solve problems.
That's
in different
awesome.
Ways
and that sounds like research driven. I don't know. I think that needs to be on your website if it's not already there. But that last sentence that you just said with kind of problem solving with the social change, it's recorded. Don't you worry. We're gonna get that back to you. But that's like, to me, that was big header. That's like right on top, man. That's awesome. I see a picture of you, arms folded, and that statement right on top. That's a really beautiful thing, and I think that's an awesome place for us to end. And I want to ask, how can the people connect to the things that you are working on? Where should we send them, if anywhere?
I mean, I have a website. I mean, the website, I got to revamp this website, but I think it's donsawyer3.com. You know, it's my website. It kind of points to my research and just different things that I've done with youth. I'm going to be updating it, like with, you know, some of the stuff that I've done, like with criminal justice and things of that nature. And so it's there. I'm on Instagram at Don PhD on Instagram. And yeah, I mean that's where I am. I mean, I gotta be better with social media. I have it, but I haven't necessarily used it as a tool for my passion project as of yet, other than, like, you know, raising the funds for, like, the scholarship fund. But yeah, that's where I am right now. And I'll make a promise to be, you know, updated.
You heard it here, folks, and it's recorded. So now it must be done. So it is written. So let it be done. My favorite line from the Ten Commandments movie. So it is written.
Absolutely.
So let it be done. Well, Don, I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your day, especially in after hearing the way you schedule your time. So thank you for prioritizing No More Reasonable Doubt and sharing the information with my audience. It's appreciated.
I hope you enjoyed that episode and found tremendous value in it. If so, don't keep it a secret. Tell a friend to tell a friend, and don't forget to follow us on Instagram, our handle, No More Reasonable Doubt. Every so often, I create a free resource to help you take your purpose or passion from a dream to an actual project. You can always find that resource at nomorereasonabledoubt.com/free-gift. This is Mike Ambassador Bruni for No More Reasonable Doubt. Remember, some dreams stay dreams, some dreams come true. It's on you.